Conananian.
But I always think in terms of longevity, and I also think in terms of how am I keeping the car. If I'm leasing it and I'm driving the car 3-4 years, it, you know, doesn't matter to me. I don't care if it blows up. It's under warranty.
It's got a leaky carburetor, a rusted air floor.
Car doctor.
So let me ask you the hard question. The engine's running. The light came on. How much further did you have till you got home?
An hour.
Okay, so you drove the car an hour with the oil pressure light on, right?
Right.
So we know it's not oil pressure. Car won't run an hour with no oil pressure.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
here's something we hope you'll really like.
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. That Tom Ray, he gets me every time. Ron and Annie, the car doctor here, 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls and answer your questions. Without any further ado, let's get this thing fired up and rolling because we got a lot of cars backed up. Going back to Tom in Jersey about his 99 Suburban. Tom, you're there, sir.
Still here, sir.
All right. So listen, it's setting a P1875, you had told us before, and they had done a transfer case motor and a transfer case module. So let's back up to the way I think the diagnosis should have been done, and maybe it'll bring to light where I think you're going with this. All right. A check engine light will come on because the vehicle is exceeding emissions 1.5 times the legal limit. All right. So you said before that they didn't check codes, or maybe they didn't check codes because there was no check engine light on. You can have a transfer case fault, a transfer case code, but not turn on the check engine light. All right?
Okay.
So, you know, you could have, listen, I've got a 2011 Chevy Cruze in the shop. It's getting a valve cover on Monday. It's getting a valve cover because it said a lean fault code, because on a Chevy Cruze, the PCV valve is cast into the plastic cover. The valve goes bad, the diaphragm fails, and it runs lean. So a bad valve cover turned on a check engine light. It exceeded emissions values. But at the same time, when I scanned it for the check engine light fault, I always do a complete module scan. I look at every module on the vehicle to see if anybody's reporting anything. That car is also setting two fault codes for the license plate lights. One's a short to ground, one's a short to battery. Two bulbs are out. So, you know, two bad license plate light bulbs created a fault code in the body computer, but didn't turn on any dashboard warning lights. Because dashboard, you know, license plate light bulbs. You think license plate light bulbs not working changes vehicle emissions? No, of course not, right? But it's still a fault. My point is, any mechanic in this day and age has got to start every diagnosis by scanning all the modules. It tells you something. And one of the biggest mistakes I think mechanics make, and I'm not trying to stand on a soapbox, but I am, is they always start with, I think it could be this. How about telling me what it isn't? How about doing a complete scan of all the modules and say, well, I've got no reported faults, so it's nothing electronic, it's nothing sensor, it's nothing wiring input, etc. Right? Would you agree with that?
I would agree.
Makes sense. So, you know, did they throw a, you know, what made them throw the transfer case motor at this thing? And that's got to be the question you've got to ask them. Okay? If just because the dash indicator was out, the knob where you turn, doesn't mean it's a bad transfer case motor. There had to be some kind of diagnosis there. If you walked into the doctor and you, Doc, my elbow hurts, and he said, Tom, we're cutting off your arm, wouldn't you think that's a little extreme? Wouldn't you want some diagnosis made?
I would.
Same thing. Okay? So how did they get to a transfer case motor? And then the next question is, Did they put a reman or a rebuilt transfer case motor in, or is it new?
They didn't say whether it was remanufactured or new.
Okay.
They just said the motor was burnt out.
Okay.
And they would replace it.
Okay.
And then after they put the motor in, they said, "Oh well, your controller is burning the motor out, so we need to replace the controller as well."
Yeah. Right. See, that's, and I don't think we're diagnosing here. I think we're throwing parts. I'm not getting a warm fuzzy. All right. Because then the next thing they're going to tell you is burnt out is the control knob on the dashboard.
I replaced that myself, so I know that can't be bad.
Right, but, you know, it's one thing to diagnose by saying, well, I think. It's another thing to say this is bad because it has no power, no ground, or these two circuits are shorted, or et cetera. All right? So now they did a transfer case motor, and they did a transfer case shift module. And now the vehicle has a P1875 fault code, right?
Yes.
P1875 is generally a fault that, you know, there's a fault in transmission transfer case related territory. Is the trans shifting okay?
No. As a matter of fact, after the light came on, I tried to put the transfer case into four-wheel high just to test it, and the control panel went blank and nothing happened.
Right. So we still got the same problem.
Yes.
Right. Sounds like they didn't fix anything, Tom. And it sounds like they didn't fix anything because they're throwing parts at this. You know what the nice thing is about a diagnosis? If I can hand somebody a printout that says, hey, look, Tom, I scanned every module on the car, here's the value in it, all right? For anybody out there that's thinking, hey, why is Ron taking the long way around the barn? I hand somebody a printout. Look, I scanned all 17 modules on your 99 Suburban, and there's no trouble codes anywhere. That at least tells you what it's not. And isn't that worth something? Instead of...
To me, yes.
Yeah, I think to any rational person. Instead of, well, I think it could be this, I think it could be that. Thinking isn't part of diagnosing. Testing is. So... You know, it's let's start the ball from there, because there's no easy way for me to guide you on this one, Tom. All right, because they've changed too many things. The tests are all different now.
I think the guide is go find yourself a new mechanic.
Yeah, and I think you go back and talk to him. How long has this guy been your mechanic?
For about a year or so.
Okay. So, you know, you remember the old days at WOR. I used to say this all the time, and I still say it now. The measure of any relationship with a mechanic is not when things are going well. It's when things are going bad. And that's when you walk in with a cup of coffee for you and a cup of coffee for the boss. And you sit down and you have that cup of coffee conversation. Hey, listen, look at it from my perspective. I brought you my car. Here's what happened. I'm getting a feeling like we're just throwing parts at it. And now it's still broken. I've paid you guys $1,000. What are you going to do to make me happy? And, you know, if he's got an attitude and, you know, gee, it's not our problem, and, you know, gee, there's nothing I can do for you, then don't waste any more time. Did you put it on a credit card?
No, I pay cash.
Okay. Well, start paying by credit card. Find yourself another mechanic at that point. And that's...
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, brother. If you need me, you know how to find me. I'm watching you on Facebook, all right?
Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome. Take care, Big Tom. Yeah, tough spot. It's, you know, the problem is they change the parameters of what's going on here. And, you know, they put components in. Now, if they put Reman, when I say that very lightly, remanufactured transfer case motor in it, you know, I don't understand how anything electrical can be remanufactured. What if it's an intermittent problem? How do you test it? How can you be sure? All right. You know, there's the potential for too many things that could go wrong exists, and I just wouldn't do it. So I, you know, Tom, you know where we are. You know where I'm to find me. Let's go over to Tim. 04 Mercedes and some problems going through a car wash. You know, Tim, if you just stop washing the car, you'd be all right. What's wrong with you? So how can I help, sir?
How you doing today?
Good. What's going on?
Well, I've got an E500, 2004. It's only got 60,000 miles on it.
Okay.
Great condition.
Right.
And there's a certain car wash. When I run it through this car wash, my ABS light comes on, the ESP light comes on, a bunch of lights on the dash.
All right.
And I've run it through other car washes without a problem. And this one here I've run through three times. The third time was simply because I forgot not to go to that one. And it went to the point, actually, where the speedometer wasn't even working. So that must be connected to the system somehow.
So let me ask you this. When you take it through the car washes, do they all do the same thing? Are they doing it an above and a below carriage wash?
both have above and below. The one that's creating the problem, I've just made an assumption that it's an undercarriage issue, and there's more power on the undercarriage wash, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay.
And what happens is, once all these lights and everything come on, within 10 or 15 minutes, what I'm assuming is whatever wire or module has been exposed to moisture dries out, everything goes away, and I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with it rains, snows, and of course up here in Maine, you know, we get snow and rain all the time.
I've heard
never
that.
Never have a problem.
Yeah.
It's just with this one particular car wash, but it's a concern because these problems typically don't get better. You know,
right? Yeah.
So I took it to the dealer. They ran a diagnostic and they said, "Hey, on a certain date, we saw the main module that controls your ABS, your ESP, that electronic stability thing, showed a fault. And but that's like $3,000. But it's not a fault now, so we want to run it through the car wash again." I'm like, whoa, you know, the car's working. Let's not run it through the car wash again because, you know, it's not getting better. It's getting worse. So, you know, I don't think the problem is the computer. It's water getting on at something exposed, in my opinion, and I just can't seem to find anyone that can narrow this down for me.
Well, let's...
And I get online, and I see all kinds of different things, drain plugs that you need to remove, and on and on and on.
Yeah, so, and, you know, my one thought is, have you owned the car since new?
No, I bought it about 3 years ago.
Do you think the car was ever in an accident?
No, I know it wasn't. I know the original owner. It's been maintained in the garage every night and,
you know,
I think immaculate.
When I start getting haunted problems like this, I start thinking about, you know, weather boots, weather seals, something wasn't assembled right as per the factory. You know, hence, you know, in my 28 years on radio, it's not a common phone call. Jerry, run my car through the car wash and dash lights come on. So you think about the number of cars out there and the potential, the number of listeners we have, and, you know, why is it, you know, you've got a problem that's less than 1% of the listening population. That's pretty low.
Right.
So I start thinking about what would change that parameter, what changes that condition. What I would try is, can you go to that car wash that causes it to happen, and can you just get a top wash?
I don't know. I've never asked that.
You know,
that's a good point. That would eliminate the undercarriage.
Right. And if you can get just a top wash and the problem doesn't happen, we know it's down under. If you eliminate the bottom wash and it consistently still happens with just doing the top, then we've got it. You know, where is it? Is it in the front? Is it in the back? Do you take some blue tape and tape the hood, weather shut it, you know, seal it, so no water gets in the engine compartment, and run it through the car wash, and then the problem goes away? Then at least you've narrowed it down to that half, that section of the car. You know where to look.
Yeah.
Right? So
yep.
do that this week. Call me back. I'm curious. All right, brother?
I'll do it.
All right, you take good care. I'm Ron Ainey, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. We got an SOS here from Michael in Texas. Michael's asking me, "Hey, Ron, carburetor for a 68 Cutlass. Down the line, 8. Oh, replacement carb's not working well. The carb looks too small. Size of your fist. Owner is looking for the original in his parts pile. Who is that guy with the carb rebuild kits?" This is from Michael. If anybody out there, I can't remember. There was a guy up in Maine that did some really excellent carburetor work. We had him on the show a couple of times. He had a couple of questions. He helped a couple of people. You know, I don't remember. It was down around the beginning of the fall. Maybe even beginning of the summer. That was before Michael's time. I'm looking at Michael. Michael's going, "I wasn't me, brother." So if anybody knows, give us a call or drop me an email, ron@cardoctorshow.com, about the carburetor rebuild kits for the older GMs, and we'll get that out to Michael and get him squared away. So let's get on over and let's go talk to Pete with an 06 Chrysler PT Cruiser and some trans issues. A lot of transmission problems today. It must have been a tough winter around America. So what's going on, Pete?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, sir. What's cooking?
2006 Chrysler PT Cruiser, 100,000 miles,
okay.
Only 100,000 miles on it. I was trying to get rid of the check engine light off. I've got a charcoal canister issue. Filled up the gas tank and crossed my fingers to see if I could get it to stay off.
Right.
Driving along, I was about to get back on the highway. The car slammed into first gear, and the park, reverse, neutral, and drive lights on the tachometer all lit up. And I was stuck in first gear.
Oh, boy. So,
and I've tried it one more time since, this is a few days ago. It's been sitting since. But the car won't shift out of first gear.
Okay. Have you tried scanning for fault codes? Do you have that ability?
Yeah, I do. I just have a little Autel, and it doesn't really throw anything. In fact, it gives me a like $7 something for the EVAP. So, yeah, I'm kind of weak with that.
Yeah. But, it sounds like we've got a fault in the trans itself. And I'm going to say it'd be nice if we could get into the TCM to see what's going. It sounds like you're stuck in limp mode.
Yeah.
And, you know, although limp mode is second gear, not first, but it sounds like an internal fault in the trans.
Well, that would explain why the thing, you could go 40 miles an hour and it didn't seem to race too much.
Right, so maybe you're in second, not first. I think you're in limp mode, which is Chrysler's way of saying, hey, we know the thing's going to break, and when it does, at least you get home so we don't have to buy you a meal in a hotel room overnight.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so that's nice of them. So at this point, you know, we've got to get it diagnosed. This could be the trans control module sitting on the front of the unit. I'm assuming this is an A604. You probably have D with a circle. You have an A604 trans, not a three-speed?
I believe so.
Yeah. You know, just an ugly transmission to work with.
Okay,
and
appreciate the whole.
Yeah,
the whole under the hood of that car is pretty tight.
Yeah, well, it's you know, have you done the timing belt on that yet? Oh boy,
not yet.
Yeah, that's a religious experience. Let me tell you, that's when you go 10 pounds of bologna in a 5 pound sack, and it's just like wow.
Okay, good. I was trying to avoid that. I mean, obviously, I can't even see the serpentine belt on that car. It's like crazy.
Well, I can convince you not to fix the trans. Think about doing the timing belt. You know, look at the timing belt on that thing. You'll never want to do the trans in your life. It's just.
I mean, I've done them on K cars and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Very different. If you can get a scan tool that reads, or a mechanic that can read, you know, trans control, one of the things you can look at on that's an A604, is CVI, clutch volume index.
Okay.
And you'll have to look up the numbers. You know, I could give you the numbers, but they won't mean anything depending upon
the thing shifted and ran fine before that.
Right.
Just slammed,
well,
bam.
Just remember, my dead dog that wasn't dead yesterday died today. So, you know, it's sooner or later it's going to break. But clutch volume index, if you end up having no fault codes but the trans isn't operating right, take a look at CVI. CVI, every gear on that transmission has a clutch volume index. Or think of a balloon. All right. When the trans is healthy, it takes so many seconds and so much volume of fluid to fill that hydraulic circuit. I always explain it as a balloon. So maybe first gear, the balloon is 6 inches. Maybe second gear, the balloon is 8 inches. Maybe third gear, the balloon is 10 inches and so on.
Yep.
So if you look at first gear instead of 6 inches, first gear, the clutch volume index is 10. It's so far out of range, what it's telling you is that something internal in the trans has failed, allowing hydraulic circuitry or hydraulic fluid to leak out of the circuit, and it's got an internal trans fault. The point becomes, looking at clutch volume index and the size of the hydraulic balloon, if you will, may give you information as to that it's an internal problem, and it'll at least give you a direction to go. Look at that, get it scanned, call me back. I can do what I can for you. I appreciate the call. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Hey, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We move into the witching hour, the last half hour of the last hour of this week. Oh, goody. Chris, Wisconsin, what's going on? How can I help?
Hey, Ron. Long-time listener. Appreciate what you do here on Saturday afternoons.
It's Thanks, man.
Always fun to listen to you.
Yeah,
I've got an old 99 Chevy Blazer with just turned over 300,000 on it, and kind of thinking towards the future, maybe upgrading to a little newer model, and wanted to get your thoughts on what you find to be a good model and year for someone who likes to do a lot of their own wrenching.
I want a
V6, and I want to stay naturally aspirated. I've heard your talk about turbos, and those things scare me for repair-wise.
Yeah, I just think a turbo, unless I'm going racing, I just don't know why I need a turbo to, you know. We just bought Mama a new Explorer, and she looked at me and she says, what do I want? I said, you want a V6 something with no turbo? I said, because we're just, you know, we're just going to the supermarket and we're going out to eat with it. We don't need any more than that. You know, it's just a, to me, it's just another thing to break. And I tend to keep cars, you know, I kept the last one. Gee, how old was her 05 Malibu? What was it? 14 years old. So, you know, I keep them a while. You know, I don't know turbos that are going to go 14, 15 years. And now somebody's going to write me an email and says, mine meant 15 years. Good. You were the one. So, you know, what sort of, where do you want to get into, like a 14, a 15 something? You want to, you know, how far up the ladder do you want to move?
Well, that was my thought on it, just to get your input on it, too. It's like, I know the newer they get, the harder they are for the weekend mechanic to work on. So what are your thoughts on how new can I go?
Well, the newer you get, the harder they are for anybody to work on. The issue becomes, the older they are, the less parts are available. And parts parts become an issue. You know, that 99 is a very mechanical, nuts and bolts kind of car. The difference between the 99 and the 2009 and then the 2015 is the more electronic they get, the more susceptible they are to what I consider, you know, parts failure. You can't find a piece. They don't keep it around. It's not available. And then what do you do? Yep. So, you know, you're either going to go to, well, I don't know, look at a 13, 14, or 15 Explorer V6. That's probably roughly the same size as what, you know, that Blazer is, that baby Blazer.
Yeah.
You know, see what you can find, you know, in the 40, 50,000 mile range. I don't care what price is at this point. We know what a new one is, so it's got to be comparable for what we're saving there. And that's a fairly straightforward, easy vehicle, some proper care and maintenance. The downside to those is they do go through the PTOs, the power takeoff unit on the side of the transfer case. The seals do leak. Ford did extend some of the warranties on those. You can inquire about that when you purchase it. And they do have issues around the 100, 110,000 mile mark with the water pump, which is internal on that V6 because of its location. So that's the bummer. That's the problem child of that vehicle. But all vehicles have their problems. All right.
Yeah.
You know, we could talk about Toyota Highlanders, or, you know, the little small, but the RAV4s. You can still get those with a V6 certain model years. But, you know, then we're going to talk about, as they get older, they've got catalytic converter issues and all the rest of the predictable stuff that Toyotas have go wrong with them too. The other way is you go real old. You know, go buy a 78 K-Series Blazer, something just big and old, and, you know, and you can get more parts for that. It's easier to get parts for something 40 years old than it is something 10 years old, believe it or not. And, you know, if you're a weekend warrior sometimes, you know, I always wanted that. You know, I keep thinking I'm going to take my 72 Monte Carlo and drive it full time, and then, you know, the other day I had to go into the city of Newark for something, to a parking garage, and I thought about it, and I said, yeah, I think the Monte Carlo would have been gone three minutes before it, you know, before I put it in the door, because, you know, back in the day, another story. So, you know, Ford Explorer is a nice vehicle. You get into a Ford Escape. If you get into something pre-12, they're solid cars. You know, we've seen those go 250, 300,000 miles. You just got to find the right one with low mileage on it. They're pretty much a brick.
Does the Escape still have a naturally aspirated V6 for it?
Yes, you can get a V6, like the 8s, the 9s, the 10s, and that's a good solid vehicle, and it's moderately priced. You know, would that
Escape still be able to tow like a 2,500-pound fishing boat?
I would think so. And, you know, I'm not 100%, but it's worth inquiring. All right.
Okay.
But let's look there. You know, I think the thing you got to think about is, it's what's parts availability going to be, and, you know, what kind of shape is it in, and how much rust is on the chassis and that kind of stuff. You're not exactly in the driest part of the country, so you may want to look.
No.
You may want to look Craigslist California and take a road trip and buy something down south and bring it north.
I had that thought. You know, I've got some cousins down in Texas I've been meaning to visit.
Yeah, you know what? It's a good excuse. Let me run, Chris. I'm up against the clock. I got a lot going on today, but I appreciate the call. All right, sir?
All right, thanks, Ron.
You're very welcome. Let's get over to Lake in Louisiana with some questions about buying a used car. What a concept. Lake, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, Doc. How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
I'm sort of thinking about a 2003 through 05 Thunderbird.
Neat car.
But I've read all kinds of things on the internet about the ignition coil problem.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is that the sort of the problem that just continues throughout the life of the car, or once you replace the coils, you'll be okay?
You know, we've got a few of those, and that's not just that in the Thunderbird. It's in the Lincoln LS. It's on all the vehicles on that platform where, you know, the car will get, you know, 80, 90, 100,000 miles on it. You're going to put a set of coils in it, and then it'll go another 50, 60, 70,000 miles, and either by then they've gotten rid of it or, you know, you're putting another set of coils in it. So it does seem to continue. I think some of it was the initial coils weren't made as well, but it's also got to do with what sort of spark plug maintenance was done along the way and how hard are you making that coil work. Are you changing the plugs when you're supposed to? You know, I guarantee you that nobody is changing spark plugs as often as the manufacturer recommends, because there's no indication that you need to. Out of sight, out of mind. You know, it's the plugs are supposed to be done on 105,000 on cars today as an average, and somewhere around 180, somebody gets a check engine light and a misfire, and they go, "Gee, I think I was supposed to put spark plugs in 4 years ago." You know, it happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I read a report on everything that went wrong with a car to decide what to buy, I'd never own anything. I'd have a bicycle. All right. I just told the previous caller, I bought my wife a Ford Explorer V6. I know the water pump's going to go bad at 100,000 miles. I just know it. That's when they fail. But I still bought it because I like the car. Every car's got its problems today, Lake.
And
that's what you got to think about.
Yeah, well, in this car, what I read was that Ford extended the warranty to 10 years, 100,000 miles for the coils. And, of course, now we're more than 10 years out.
Right.
So my question, you know, was, hey, if I know that I'm going to have to replace the coils, will I be okay after that?
Well,
or is this something that's going to happen every, you know,
if you're asking
me 5,000 miles or something?
If you're asking me, did they update the part number, I'm going to tell you that when I replace the coils, I could see a visible difference in the vendor, the way it was made, and a slight difference in the case. So I'm going to say, yeah, they likely changed something. Exactly what,
okay,
that I don't know the answer to. But
gotcha.
As long as somebody's using a good quality part and they're doing the rest of the maintenance, listen, man, it's a T-Bird, all right?
Yeah.
Go buy one. Drive it. Life's too short. Have a good time.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, sir. You take good care. 855-560-9900. We're back right after this.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Let's get over and talk to Lee in Vermont, 17F250. Lee, what's going on? How can I help?
Well, it's... And thanks for taking my call, first of all.
You're welcome, sir.
When I hook the trailer to it, or when I unhook the trailer to it and I get out of trailer mode, it stays in... The computer on the dash stays in trailer mode, and you have to manually go in and disable the trailer. It doesn't always work. It does not always put up the right
message.
Steps.
Yeah.
I mean, Ford put this out. Ford has the instructions, and I can't help believe there's not a permanent fix to reprogram the computer or whatever they have.
Well, wait. When you say Ford put out, what are you talking about? There's a bulletin out about this. You're aware of that?
I thought there was.
There is. 18-2106 came out March of 2018. Have you seen that?
No. Oh. 18-2106.
Oh, yes,
no,
sir.
I have not.
March 29th of 2018, if I remember right. It's been out there a while. And it talks about if the instrument cluster is showing trailer connected and or disconnected, one or the other without a trailer connected, and or you hook a trailer up and it still shows trailer disconnected, then the bulletin's got some diagnostic steps in, and ultimately the problem's going to be that you're going to replace the trailer connector at the back of the bumper.
Okay.
All right, but read the bulletin, because Ford actually has extended the warranty on a lot of vehicles. It started model year, if I remember right, as early as model year 2015 on some vehicles. Like, I think it's 2015 through 18 F-150s, and it affects Navigators and Super Duties and some of the Transits and some of the Expeditions and things like that.
I don't doubt it. I just didn't find it, couldn't find it, or whatever.
Yeah, it's just out.
I believed it was out there because of what... The manual instructions that Ford put out, if they're putting that out, they know the problem exists and there ought to be a fix for it.
You know, I've come to the conclusion, and after doing this for 40-something years, not just radio is only 28, I've come to the conclusion that every diagnosis for every problem, if you can solve it in 10 minutes because you got lucky because you saw seven of them before it the day before, that's good. But I think the majority of diagnoses today, it's like the diagnostic routine is the same. Verify the problem, look for bulletins, look for recalls, check NHTSA, check the manufacturer's website, duplicate the condition, and then software updates. And after you go through those six or seven steps, then you can begin the hard diagnosis. Because it seems like all those steps have to be taken before you start taking anything apart anymore. Because everything is either software, an update, a component, a warranty, a bulletin, so just be mindful. All right, but get your hands on that bulletin. That'll speed it up for you. All right, okay, kiddo?
I got one more thing for you.
Real quick.
A programmable chip for that truck, 6.2 liter gas. Nobody seems to want to make one for a gas. And
the problem is it's too new, in my opinion, and you're right, because it's gas. So the only thing you could try is an air intake kit from one of the manufacturers to see if that'll improve it. But, you know, nothing's going to really make the big changes until somebody does come out with a chip. So, best answer I got, but I know what you're up against. You know, not every vehicle does a chip, you know, make. Diablo Sport doesn't make a chip for everything, unfortunately, and a lot of it has to do with the sheer numbers of what was made. There was probably more vehicles of that generation built with diesel than gas, and that's why that's where all the money goes. All right, kiddo? I gotta go. I'm up against the clock. I'm Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Anian, the Car Doctor. Jim, Wisconsin. We're going to do 2 and 3 minutes. Go, Jim. What do you got? 06 Duramax.
Yep. Long story short is I've had it since it was new. It's got 160,000 on it. My good friend was going to help me take the box off because I wanted to put stainless steel brake lines on and rebuild all the brakes, all new parts, which I have.
Right.
So I was going to put in some Stant thermostats, and I was thinking it while I was at it to go ahead and put in a new water pump and a new radiator.
Sure.
At this vintage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wanted your opinion on that.
Yeah.
And I had a question about a specific part number.
Well, I would tell you to let's do what parts you can get access to. Think of it like this: it's an 06. It's 13, 14 years old. It's got high mileage on it. What are we waiting for? It to break down on the side of the road, and then we're stuck from home, and we're dependent upon getting it fixed somewhere else. And then the other issue is let's get some new parts or good quality parts while they're still available before they're discontinued. My 04 Suburban, 60,000 miles on it. I came across a brand new from GM, original GM part number AC compressor. Paid less than $200 for it. I don't need it, but I know they're a high failure rate, and it's sitting in the shop at the top of my locker in a nice warm spot in the back room. And someday when I need it, because I'm going to drive that truck forever, I'm going to have it. And, you know, AC compressor to me is real important. So parts aren't a problem. Get them while you can and put them on while you can. One suggestion: when you're doing the stainless steel brake lines, put a drop of oil on the back of the flare. And so that the nut, when it crushes against the stainless steel, it goes smoother. And put a drop of oil on the threads of the line so when you tighten it down, you can really crush it, because stainless is hard to get to seal. One of the problems I run into when I do the hot rods, every time I do stainless, I've tried that trick, and it works really well. It kind of holds things together. All right, kiddo?
Those are on the directions for it.
Right, yeah. Put a drop of oil on the threads and on the backside of the flare, and I think you'll be better off. And change whatever parts you can get access to, as long as it's a good quality part, preferably made in USA or Mexico, not our newest state, China. All right, kiddo? Do that. You got any other questions, give me a call back. Let's get over and talk to Charles in Virginia. What's going on here, Charles, real quick?
I have a wiring problem, I think. 98 Ford Taurus, the interior ceiling lights are staying on.
Okay. So
I take the bulb out to keep them from running the battery down.
All right. Do you recall which door or when it occurred that it just one day you just noticed you opened and closed the door and the light didn't go out?
it's my granddaughter's car. She just noticed it wouldn't go out, and it actually stayed on with all the doors closed.
Okay, but do you happen to remember which door? Is it that she's a one passenger vehicle, you know, driver, that it's always the driver's door, and then one day she closed the driver's door and the light didn't go out, or is she?
Yeah, driver's door.
Driver's door. So if it's the driver's door, it's likely the door jam switch, which is inside the door. The door panel's got to come off. The door jam switch, you actually have to face the front of the car and shove your arm back to the door latch. You'll find it and twist it. Go Google it, look online. You'll see it's a little tiny switch that twists into the bottom of the door latch. It's got a very short stroke plunger, not even a 32nd of an inch. Sometimes I'll take a little liquid wrench or WD-40, put a drop of it on where the latch is that the pin catches on. I'll shoot a little in there. Sometimes it'll go into the switch, soak its way in, and release the plunger. Try that. Call me back. Till next time, I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priced.